Hello, everyone, and welcome to Hit and Hustle from IrishSportsDaily.com. I'm your host, Greg Flamong, and with me, as always, is Jamie Uwayama, Mr. Jamie University. It is Thursday, February 8th, and we've got a mailbag show for everyone today. Got a lot of good questions from Irish Sports Daily customers on a myriad of topics: 2025 recruiting, offensive line, of course, what excites us about the spring, and other things related to the football team. So that's going to be what our show is going to be about. So thank you for tuning in. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to this channel. Please like this video, and please hit the notification bell so whenever it is we are going live. Links to the podcast are in description below. Rajon hustled and got here just in time to hit it. So good job by Rajon. Good hustle. Arzalamia is hitting the hustle at work. So thank you guys for tuning into the show. And we're going to have a good time, Jamie. We've got a lot going on our channel right now. I just posted, a couple days ago, we posted a Dimes with Dara episode that featured Notre Dame guard Sonia Citron. I really recommend everyone checks that out. Learn a little bit about Sonia and how she enrolled at Notre Dame, how she chose Notre Dame, about leadership, meeting her new teammates, and adjusting to different kinds of roles as a leader on the basketball team, growing up as a young athlete as well, balancing, you know, kind of like everything that goes along with that. So that's really good. We're going to have another Dimes with Dara episode that comes out either tomorrow or Saturday. I haven't decided which day, but that's going to be with Marina Mabry, former Notre Dame guard, Dara's sister. So that's going to be on as well. Terry Tyler asked the question, will you guys be having Ghouls be on again? So that's another show we released on Tuesday. We went almost 2 hours with Mike Goolsby, former Notre Dame linebacker, talking basically ball, right, about Notre Dame position groups. And a lot of people liked it. A lot of people were really happy. We will likely probably have him on again, right? I think we had a good time talking about things. He's got a lot of different projects going on, as well as his Patreon show that we talk about on that episode. So I recommend everyone checks that out. But we're probably going to have him on again, right? I think a lot of people liked it. And if people like it and people request it, then we will make it happen. So, Jamie, how you doing? How are you doing on this Thursday?
I'm doing pretty well. Chugging along, man. Notre Dame's, there's a commitment that Notre Dame is potentially getting today in Owen Strebig. So that's another one for the offensive line if they can land him today, which, you know, all signs, the winds are pointing in that direction. So I think it's a good day. It's a good day for Notre Dame football.
The winds are blowing in that direction, I think, is the way that we would put that. Yeah, so we'll check that out. What do you know what time he's announcing?
I believe it's 5 Eastern.
5 Eastern time? All right, so check that out. You're going to want to stay locked in to IrishSportsDaily.com around 5 Eastern. See if something comes up. It could not. That's there's always surprises in recruiting. But the winds are blowing towards South Bend, and so that's a very good thing to keep track of. And another thing to keep track of is your wardrobe, Jamie, and what you've got in your closet. And if you need to upgrade that situation, then you're going to want to head over to esqclothing.com, which is founded by Notre Dame alum Ga Wang. And you've seen ESQ on all your favorite Notre Dame players and coaches. With over a decade of making the best custom clothing available, ESQ will help you look and feel your best in 2024. From a perfect fitting suit or sport coat, shirt or bomber jacket, or that perfect tuxedo for wedding season, you can check out Ga's amazing work at esqclothing.com. Book an appointment to upgrade your wardrobe today. Mention ISD and get 10% off your entire purchase. That's ISD to get 10% off your entire purchase. All right, let's get to the questions, because there's a 2025 question like kind of right up front, or just the recruiting question right up front that we'll get to right now. This one is from CFB Hertz. Big picture, how do you view Freeman's first two recruiting classes? Would they be good enough to make us legitimate national championship contenders if we continue recruiting at the level that Marcus Freeman did in 2023 and 2024? Or are they steps in the right direction but still below the level we need? What's your take on that question, Jamie?
I think it's the latter. The steps in the right direction but still below the level that Notre Dame needs to be at. Because I would say that I do think there's a lot of there's already been evidence that there's a lot of good freshmen from that 2023 class that I think that people should be legitimately excited about. Just for example, on defense, Christian Gray and Boubacar Traore, I think those are like building blocks. Like those guys could be elite players in college football, in my opinion. And then, you throw in like the Drake Bowens, the Jaden Osburys. I think there's still more that we have to find out about some of the defensive line class and all that too. And there's, it all just depends though on like the development of the safeties, the development of that defensive line class, the development of the offensive line class. Certainly Jeremiah Love, I think, has a chance to be a star too. Like that's great. And then this class they just signed, they signed the most top 50 kids that they've signed since that 2013 class, which was a top five class, right? They got guys that are, the Cam Williams, the Bryce Youngs, right? The KVAs, like they have those types of guys there, but it's going to depend on how some of these other guys develop and how well they did identifying and talent there and developing that talent later on, because if some of those guys don't hit big, then it's not going to be that, right? So I do think that they have to jump up another level. I think they're obviously closing the gap of to where they were from where they were before. Mm-hmm. If you look at this last class they signed, that would have been, I believe, by the 24/7, their composite score that they give like classes, it would have been like the third best, I think it would have been the third best ever Brian Kelly class, or maybe the second best ever. Like right. it's up there, right? So if you look at it that perspective, you're like, okay, well that's, obviously that's a good thing. You're recruiting at like the highest levels that Brian Kelly did, but you'd always say that Brian Kelly needed to keep that up and then build on it, and he never did. And
are you about when you say composite score? Are you talking about average rating?
The overall, whatever.
Right? Each player has assigned points in the total.
But I think the average rating is 91 something or whatever, and even that is like, And then if you look at the last three classes and you combine like the average rating in the last three classes, that's like as good as Notre Dame has had, better than any time that than Brian Kelly had 3 years in a row. Right. So that's always a good thing. But if you compare it to Georgia, right, it's like it is a notch below. And I don't think Notre Dame's ever going to quite get to Georgia level year after year, but you have to get closer to that. And I think that's it's going to be important. And that's where it comes in, where like in this class, Devin Williams, you got to land a guy like that out of Georgia. Yeah. You have to land those kind of guys. It's like Deuce McKnight, you got to hold on to him. You got to have that guy, right? Like all these types that anyone would want, anyone in the country would want. Those are the guys you have to win. That's why landing the KVAs over Ohio State, over USC, that's huge.
I think like we talk a lot about the D-line all the time. And I think that is a big one, like the interior guys. Like not just like the huge like Sean Chevalano types like you do, but like also those three techs too. Like those smaller guys who like – when I say smaller, I mean like the 280, 290 guys who it's like – You're not taking a strong side end, and he wants to become like this is a guy who's actually like a three tech is like gonna be legit. you know, like Stephon to it, right? Like, I mean, he played a little bit different scheme, but like someone like that.
100% like, would have been a three tech in this scheme. Yeah.
Right. So it's just like the guys who fit that mold, who come in, it's just like, man, that's a dude. Like, that's a guy right there. You know, like they do need them, those. They need more of those guys. And like you said, like, you know, like the Dallas Golden, like that's why I'm so kind of like, I'd make a big deal out of Dallas Golden and Devin Williams and Mark Zachary, because those are the types of guys you need kind of in every class to really propel yourself up. And like the other part is they don't have that type of athlete right now, like at wide receiver, and at least on the board for 2025. And look, we'll see where it goes, right? Like, it's very early. Mike Brown just got hired, so he has to make inroads there. Like, I think we all have to be a little bit patient with wide receiver this cycle, just because of the change in leadership and who's running that group and the recruiting style of Mike Brown. He's got to meet a bunch of guys. He's going to put out new offers. He's got to develop relationships. So the landscape of what I think, or you think, the wide receiver room is right now could change very rapidly by the time we get to June, July. So I would say hang tight, everybody there. But like that does have to be on par with like you're in on Dallas Golden types. You're in on Devin Williams types. You're in on Mark Zachary types at the wide receiver position. Beyond that, I think they're pretty close, right? Like a part of this too is like this is where the coaching kind of piece comes in. And there's a question later on about like development. And Al Washington, who's done a good job, and his name's in the news right now. He's a serious candidate to be the head coach at Boston College with Bill O'Brien. So we'll see where that goes. But I just think that I think they have enough to where it's kind of one of those things where you don't have the talent to be a serious national title contender until you do, right? Like, no one thought that Michigan did, and then they did, right? And so You do have to develop those guys. And I think a big part of it is they have a staff now, I think, that is like well-positioned to develop the type of talent that they're bringing in. The talent doesn't have to kind of overcome some of the deficiencies, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about just as an experience. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, 100%. Development is huge. And Notre Dame is never going to be in a position where first of all, development, you don't think Georgia, it's not about just signing the class. And Greg Wasserman brought up Texas A&M and what they got, right? And like their, you know, issues with their 2022 class, which was number one rated. But, you know, in hindsight, you see that class, it was like he was star chasing. Like Jimbo Fisher was star chasing and just like only cared about signing the most five stars. It didn't care about the fit or whatever and all that kind of stuff. And I don't think that's not something that – I don't think people have to worry about that with Notre Dame, because the guys that they're after that are really highly rated dudes, they're not the guys that, you know, are – you're worried about the fit. Like, you're not worried about their fit at Notre Dame or whatever. That's not the thing. So, like, even like a Keon Keeley – he didn't not choose Notre Dame because he didn't fit at Notre Dame. He would have fit fine. Like, it's just he chose Alabama because for other reasons, right? So that's the thing. It's like, if you're finding guys and you're able to find guys who can fit the program and can make it at Notre Dame, that's how you're going to have success, because you got to be able to retain these guys. And that's the other thing too. You have to be able to show progress, and you have to be able to do all these other things with it in terms of NIL and you know, the strength conditioning program and Marcus Freeman still being there and all that kind of stuff. Because let's face it, like, there was just a big reason why Texas A&M, some of these guys, they were bad fits, and then some of the guys bolted because it was like, well, there's a coaching change and there's all this other change and whatever, and they wanted out. Like, that's just kind of how it is. There's the general dysfunction around the coaching staff. If you don't have that general dysfunction around the coaching staff, you're going to be fine. You're going to be able to retain these guys, which is like why you don't see you don't see a lot of mass exoduses at like programs that are really successful. You just don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so they like A&M was like you said, star chasing. It was just like anyone that we can get, we're just going to go after them. And the reason they're coming is the money. Right. And like, sure. Everyone, like if that's how it is, that's fine. But there's just a lot like with NIL right now in terms of like, not everyone's getting their money, you know, and, but you make a bunch of promises and it's just like, you show up and it's like, do I even like it? Do I even want to play here? Like, it was just such a bad, like the kind of complete opposite way of the way that Notre Dame is doing it. So that's kind of like such an outlier example. Like it's almost like not relevant to Notre Dame at all. So yeah, there's a balance with all of that and bringing guys in and the types of players that they're getting, but it kind of goes to like, and it's like the next question here, XRND 1994 is asking what excited you most about potential growth for the defense and offense this spring? So my thing for the offense is like, here's the thing about Mike Denbrock, right? Like there are so many, like aspects of his X and O kind of his X and O expertise and his X and O like acumen, right? That are exciting, right? The way that he uses motion, the way that he attacks matchups, the way that he gets numbers in the box for his running game, right? The way that he can use a guy like Riley Leonard, right? Like that is all very exciting. But the thing that I think excites me the most, more than any of that stuff, is he knows how to coach college football players and he knows how to coach college football offenses, right? And like Jared Parker, I think there's been like too much of people like, you know, like when he got hired and you make a tweet about the hiring, it's like, you know, is Troy going to win like over under wins like 0.5? It's like, settle down. Like he wasn't that bad. Like he really was not. It's just that like for what Notre Dame needed to be last year, it was his first year as offensive coordinator. Like he just wasn't equipped to deal with all of the little things that come up that are just unknowable as an offensive coordinator. And so he just wasn't equipped to deal with that stuff. Mike Denbrock has seen everything. He's been at Notre Dame. He's been at Cincinnati. He's been at LSU. He's developed offenses for various types of players with different types of rosters. Like people say, oh, he has to have the talent at LSU. He didn't have that talent at Cincinnati. And he took them to the playoffs. You know, like he has worked under various types of situations. And like, to me, that's what excites me more than any like personnel stuff, is that he knows how to get the most out of his players and out of his offense. And he knows how to make them work and he knows how to teach it. And he knows how to get the players to execute it. That excites me the most about the offense in the spring.
Yeah. And I think, all you ever want out of any kind of coordinator is like when the guy has the talent, it's like he maximizes it.
Yeah.
He maximizes it. And I would say, you know, being the number one offense would mean that you maximized it, right? Having your guy win the Heisman, you did a good job, you know, check that box, like all that kind of stuff. Like you just, it's funny because, you know, Brian Kelly went on that infamous Pete Thamel piece that was like, you know, we need Will Fuller and Michael Floyd on the same team at the same time. Although, yeah, I mean, he did nothing to really help do that, but then he kind of had that at LSU, right? With, you know, Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas, and then they were number one offense, but obviously their defense stunk, so they weren't able to do anything. But that's just like, I mean, it goes to show, it's just like, what do you do with the talent? So that's what I'm kind of excited about the potential for growth is like, well, I think that you're going to see a lot of these guys kind of like start to maximize their full potential there, right? Because they're going to be, you know, he's going to find out about them. And that's not going to happen in the spring though. Like, so it's like the growth for the offensive defense, a lot of the offense is like kind of figuring that part out of being like, oh, this guy can do this. And I didn't know this guy could do this and all of this. And like, he couldn't do this before, but now he can do this now. And it's like this offensive lineman who was at the beginning of spring was like, this guy's running with the third team. Now all of a sudden he's competing and he's getting reps with the ones, right? Like all that kind of stuff. That's kind of what more about spring about. So spring is about for me. There's a lot of like individual growth and, you know, there'll be growth within the scheme and stuff. So I think that's important is like the individual growth on offense, like those specifically offensive line, I would think is the most important. And then I think really for like, if I'm looking at the defense, I'm looking at the linebacker position because it's young and you want to figure it out because I do think that there's like, obviously there's a lot of development that needs to be done with the defensive line with some of the young guys coming up and certainly at like the safety position with the young guys coming up too. But you know, those guys who are, you want to develop there, those young guys you want to develop, they're not starters at on the defensive line. They're like trying to crack the rotation. They're, you know, Adon Schuler, Ben Minich, Luke Talix, those guys are trying to be the third safety, most likely, not a starter. So it's like almost like you're getting rid of them ready to play this year, but kind of to really be more prominent in 2025, where in the linebacker, it's like, well, these guys got to be ready now, right? They got to be ready now. So I think it's about like finding the – who do you think are the – Outside of Kaiser, outside of Snead, who you know he's going to have a role. He's going to have a role. Whether or not he can be an every down guy, that's another question. But he's going to have a role. It's like, is Bowen going to be like starter worthy? Like where you're like, man, you feel good about it. And it is, you know, KVA and like come in and like, wow, he's really, I mean – it's one thing to say like he's college ready and then another thing for him to go out and show it. Is that going to happen? Right. So it's kind of like figuring all that out. And then you just, you know, it's just like finding out the strengths and weaknesses of the team and kind of like building off from there.
Yeah. Like will there be like real buzz about KVA? That's an interesting thing to track as the offseason progresses. Next question from Barney M. I noticed when you ranked the units on the team, you didn't discuss the special teams. What do you think of our special teams for 2024? So Mitch Jeter is going to be the kicker, right?
Very good.
Feel good about that, right? He's a good kicker for South Carolina. I like Faison as a punt returner. I if that wasn't the case, I would be stunned. I like him there, so that's a good situation. Punting, I think, is going to be still have the same punter from last year, so that's going to be Bryce McPherson. He's going to be back, so I think that should be fine. I mean, I don't know. I there's no reason to feel like a concern about it. Like their experience, they have athletes. They still like they have a lot of options at kick returner. Right. So I feel, I mean, I guess if we were ranking, you know, it's kind of hard to rank them.
I guess there's all these other pieces that go into
it. Yeah. There's too many things. What I would say is like Notre Dame special teams should be a strength in 2024. I feel very good about it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I think where we come off on that. Yeah. All right. Sloth, here we go. You talked recently about the staff trying to find the JOK type cheat code to run their ideal defensive scheme they want. So I have three questions. Who on the roster is most in the JOK mold? Would you say Snead?
Yes.
Okay. 2025 recruit is the prime target in the JOK mold. We'll get to that in a second. And if you could only pick one to guarantee in each class each year, would it be a high pedigree, prototypical backer KVA type or an under-the-radar JOK type that is the perfect Rover fit? All right, Jamie, let's 2025. Prime target in the JOK mold, I would say his brother. He's probably the prime target in the JOK mold, I would say. They kind of play the same way. If you only pick one to guarantee in the class, would it be a KVA type or a JOK type? There's perfect Rover. What would you say? if you could only guarantee one in each class?
I would take the KVA type because the potential is a pass rusher too. Because I just think that that it just adds kind of a little bit more value. I will say honorable mention to the 2025 recruit. And that's another thing, but like Dallas Golden, it's like the versatility. Like that's the kind of thing like I think is, you know, where he's not, he's not going to play that position or whatever, but it's just like a guy that you're like, oh, he's safety. And this, you know, you put him on your defense, you're like, hey, Dallas, this week you're going to do this. And then this week you're going to do this. This is like, and that's like the beauty of having, like, I mean, that was the beauty of having Kyle Hamilton, because Kyle Hamilton was the same thing. That's incredible. These guys, two guys play on the same defense. But like,
right.
That's like, that's the beauty of having that, those two players, is that you, I wish that, like, man, if Kyle Hamilton played at the same time when Xavier Watts was at his peak. And then it's like, oh, you could do so much more with Kyle Hamilton.
Yeah.
Then kind of like how the Ravens are using him now, right? Because they can do all these different things, right? So I think the whole point is you want to get as many of those guys as possible. And so, yeah, maybe I wouldn't even have a preference. Maybe you just like, I think you just get whoever you can get and try to just stack as many of those guys. And that's why it's just because they're so valuable that you can, you know, just – players that can do multiple jobs at a high, high level, it's like gold. Like you just, they're just extremely, extremely hard to find. So, I mean, I would say even like, so Maris Leofau, he could do multiple jobs at a good level, but not like in an elite level, right? Mm-hmm. So, but if you could find somebody who could do, be him, but do it at that other thing, that might be KVA. Like that is kind of like, you know, what you want. And that is Hamilton, JOK, you know, those are those types.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. Cause like if I could guarantee an under the radar JOK type, like, I feel like, okay, here's the thing. I feel like they can always get, like they have Teddy Rizak in this latest class in 2024. Like he's kind of the under the radar JOK type, right? Like, yeah. That's what they want him to be. You can always get a guy who's like that, who's just an athlete. They don't always hit, right? And just look, similarly, like, KVA types don't always hit either. Like, that, no one's a sure thing. But it's like you would roll the dice with someone like KVA a whole lot. Like, he's – they're just so – if you could guarantee it in the class, you know, like, you want to get that high
pedigree. Yeah. Like you just, well, and just I'd like it as another counter to that, too, is that – so JOK was, you know, he was a composite three-star, you know, recruit. He was like 190 pounds. He was like a linebacker safety hybrid receiver, great receiver on offense, by the way. Go watch his highlights as receiver on offense. They should have put him, maybe should have put him at receiver, Greg. I mean,
use your best players all over
the field. That's my big take. But he was just a phenomenal football player, but he was 190 pounds. And it was like, well, he needed to get to that certain level. And there was a reason why he was whatever. I had him as a low four-star kid. And, but there was a reason why he was like ranked where he was, because it was like, well, he had to answer all these other questions about like, well, I thought he was a good fit for Notre Dame at that Rover spot. And I was like, this is why I was like, he is a four-star, because he's going to eventually be, but it's going to take time. It did take some time and then obviously took off. But Jalen Seed's a perfect example. The guy's, you know, everyone's like, this guy's like JOK. And he was like a five-star. Well, it's taking some time, you know, like it's not even a guy who is not, he was not under the radar, right? But it's like, there's still these other things. It's like, part of it is like being a jack of all trades, master of none. You have to be able to, you know, you got to be able to, some guys can get great at all these things and other guys just never find it. And that's the difficulty of doing that. And what you kind of need is finding a guy who can do that. And that's why you want to sign multiple guys like that, so you can just keep going.
Yeah. And like it just kind of like goes to show that, again, star ratings, what can you do? And are you going to be able to apply it in college? And that's just right? Like, so it's like JOK and Jalen Snead, like they both have to be able to apply all of their athletic ability, right? And you pointed out on the last show with Mike Goolsby, Jalen Snead is ahead technically of where JOK was. Like, a lot of that was due to injury with JOK. He broke his foot, so he had to miss a whole year because of that, right? So we don't know what he would have done as a sophomore, but like, he redshirted as a freshman, didn't play as a sophomore, and then he came on as a junior. Jalen Snead's going into his junior year, right? So let's see where it goes, right? He's going to get a ton of reps.
He still has 3 years of eligibility. Yeah.
Marist is on the NFL, right? So there's no one ahead. He's going to get a ton of opportunity in the springtime. Party at the Moon Tower. All right, this is a fun one. Pick two games, one win and one loss that, had the result been reversed, would have changed the trajectory of the program. So if Notre Dame beats Alabama to win the national championship, Brian Kelly leaves the NFL, Notre Dame hires Skip Holtz. I don't know where that comes from, but
that was the one thing I'm like, I don't think there was ever a point in time.
I was like, what was it? Was that in the cards? I don't know. But
no, it was definitely not in the cards.
If Notre Dame had won a national title in 2012, hire whoever you want at that point. I don't care.
I don't think Skip Holtz was on the board, but
yeah. Or the other one, Marcus Freeman loses to Clemson year one, finishes 8-5, no signature win, plus ugly losses against Marshall and Stanford, kills all momentum. So those are examples. Jamie, what is a win? If what is a win that happens? Turn a loss into a win and a win into a loss, I guess. So what, give me a loss that you would turn into a win that would change the trajectory of the program.
Oh, man, you know what? This is really tough because I do think that Alabama one. Obviously that if they won a national championship,
let's throw that out.
Yeah. And also too, they just got killed. They had no business. They were never going to win the game. So it's like there, nothing could have happened. They played that game 100 times out of 100. They're losing 100, you know, like that was, so that was, it's hard to pick that one. And the one that always sticks out to me as a what if is the 2014 Florida State, because obviously they kind of won the game, right?
They didn't kind of win. Yeah. They won the game.
Yeah.
They won the game.
So if that doesn't happen, I don't think they have, even with all the injuries that they had later on, like, I don't think, you know, they have the collapse that they have at the end of that, season. And you know, and does that change Everett Golson's trajectory? Probably, right? It probably does. And I like, but then again, they had a really great 2015, and part of the narrative going into 2015 was, man, they had this collapse there at the end, but then they kind of resurrected it with a big bowl win in against LSU in the Music City Bowl, and then built off of that, and the offensive line was great the next year, and blah blah blah, right? So I don't know what it changes and what kind of, like, you know, how that what if changes it, but I do think that it's like one of those things that it would have changed so much. But then again, it's like Brian Van Gorder was the defensive coordinator. And it's like, does this guy get longer? Because he didn't need to be the defensive coordinator for any longer than he did. He needed to be let go before, but it wasn't going to happen. So does that mean that he sticks around longer? They never get to hire Mike Elko and then, you know, Clark Lea and whatever, and then, you know, have this kind of like defensive renaissance since 2017. Like, I don't know, right? But that game just always sticks out to me.
I'm going to go with, okay, so there's like two for this one, actually. A loss into a win. I'm going to say 2017 Miami, where like that team was rolling. I mean, they were truly rolling. And not just that, but Georgia was rolling too. So it's like you lost by one to Georgia. Then the team kind of came together after that. They blew out Michigan State on the road, which was a 10-3 team. They blew out USC. And then the next week they had to play NC State, blew them out, right? There was the Heisman buzz for the running back. And it was just like you go to Miami and I can't remember why I was where we went, but that game, I could not watch it. We were flying home from somewhere, and I don't even remember where we were flying home from. All I know is that I was on a plane during the game, and I was like, I had this weird superstition thing where I couldn't watch it. And so I was just like, I'm not going to check. And then we landed the plane, and I knew it was like right around like probably middle fourth quarter, if not near the end of the fourth quarter. And I was like, fine, I'll check on my phone. It was 34-8. And I was like,
what?
Yeah. What? Like, I did not think that was even possible, right? And from there, if they beat Miami, I don't think there's any chance that they fall apart against Stanford the way they did. I mean, like, Brandon Wimbush went into a complete, like, just funk. Like, the whole team, just, like, complete deflation. Never would have lost to Stanford. 2017 was not a great year. Alabama had they were not like super strong team. Georgia was good, obviously, but Alabama was like it was the Jalen Hurts like Tua thing. That was a low scoring game against Georgia. The Oklahoma, like I feel like physically they could have beaten up Oklahoma a little bit. Like they had a real chance. That's one. Okay. So I think that might have changed the trajectory for that. Another one is in 2021, Notre Dame doesn't lose to Cincinnati. They beat Cincinnati. They are undefeated. And going into the playoffs, Brian Kelly never leaves for LSU because he's not leaving an undefeated team that's probably ranked like one or two, definitely going to the playoffs. And Marcus Freeman never happens. Maybe he goes to Duke, right, to be the head coach instead of Mike Elko.
Yeah.
Then Mike Elko like takes another job and then he ends up at Notre Dame. Like there's so much stuff that would have come from that. Just beating Cincinnati. That would have changed a lot of things. Do you have a loss or a win you turn into a loss that changed the trajectory of the program? It's kind of hard in that way.
Yeah. I mean, that one is hard, like, because it's like, so he mentioned the Clemson year one. It's like they beat the brakes off of Clemson. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
So now all of a sudden we're just going to flip that. Like, it's just, I guess there's like little things here and there. Like, you could point to like a bunch of Brian Kelly nail biters that they won.
Yeah.
That, okay. Here's an example. They get taken to the woodshed by Michigan in 2019, right?
That's a great one. That is a great one. Yes. Go.
It was bad. And then they play Virginia Tech. I mean, they were better than Virginia Tech. Like, go look at like the underlying numbers in the game, and it's like Notre Dame actually dominated that game in a long sense. Obviously, there was like the Jafar Armstrong fumble at the goal line, but like they won that game by the skin of their teeth at the end, right? Mm-hmm. With Ian Book shushing the home crowd, like just an all time moment. But that is the kind of thing where like, oh man, like, it could have gone really downhill. And I mean, I don't think it was going to go that way because of Ian Book is just like, say what you want about Ian Book as a quarterback, whatever. The guy's a winner. Like, he's a guy, he was like in a competitor and whatever. So that kind of thing. Like, I think like there's a reason why they won that game, and they had a bunch of guys on that team that were like, we're not losing this game, you know? And like they won it, but like, oh boy, like that could have been, it could, and they went on from that, and then they kicked the crap out of the rest of their schedule.
Yeah.
That year. And then that kind of led into 2020 where they right. had the undefeated season. But boy, oh boy, if that ended up being like, say, like a 9-4 team instead of 11-2. And then it's not like Kelly wouldn't have been on the hot seat, I don't think, because obviously they just went to the playoff the year before. But there would have been different vibes. There would have been absolutely different vibes. And that's the kind of thing where maybe like, maybe Kelly would have got out after that year or something like that. Cause yeah. Here's the other thing with Brian Kelly. He was kind of looking to get out for a while before he got out. So it was like, yeah. he was unhappy for various reasons. So it was like, maybe he would have got out earlier. And then it's like, I mean, I would have to look at who was available then, but you just never know. Man, speaking of that, I was just thinking, it is so crazy now that if you don't have like a coach in waiting in place right now in college football, like your roster's just going to get roasted. Like,
yeah,
just,
you got to be ready to go.
Even like getting Mike Elko at Texas A&M, and I know they signed all these guys in the portal, and, you know, those guys are going to help for sure. But they're not the same as all those guys that are like probably going to be in the NFL in 2025 that they lost. Right. So, and he was the guy who was on the staff that recruited a lot of those guys. So it's like,
yeah.
even that is like, it's hard, right? You're not going to, the transitions now, it's just like incredible. So like, I can't even imagine, I guess BC's already at ground zero. So they got to just do whatever, but it's just like, mm-hmm. to have to hire a head coach right now, like,
yeah,
oh my gosh, it's just brutal.
Yeah. The 2019 one is good because there's the what happens to Ian Book then. Like, I actually asked him about this when he came on the show. I was like, did you feel like during, like, before this drive or whatever, like, if I don't do this, like, there's going to be a lot of calls for Phil Dracovic at that point? And he was like, no, I didn't. That never occurred to me. Like, he was like, we were going to go down and score. Like, I never thought, like, you know, like, and he's just like that. Like, when I was talking to him, like, I actually 100% agreed just because, or I believed him because he had that mindset of like, no, like, why would I think that? But like, there would have been a lot of calls for Phil Dracovic if they had lost. Yeah. And so then that's another one, right? Like, does Phil Dracovic, does he become the starter in 2020? Does Ian Book leave? Does he go to another program? Right? Like, there's so much that could have happened from that had they lost that game. Like you said, like, does Brian Kelly get out earlier? And Marcus Freeman never makes his way to Notre Dame. So that's a really good example. Next question. Actually, you know what? I did want to point out Jason Smith. He makes a comment here. You can't. So we were talking about guarantees in the sport. You can't guarantee anyone is a hit in football, but one thing you can guarantee to be at championship level is the Greg Flamong Segs. Thank you very much for that, Jason. Always going Absolutely. To talk about going championship level. And if you want your message, your website or your social media page to be at championship level, then what you need to do is you need to go to VSRmedia.com, VSRmediaCompany.com, which is founded by Notre Dame football pregame host and Emmy Award-winning anchor Vahid Saadrazadeh. VSR Media provides professional and cinematic video and photo. Whether you're looking for a collegiate or pro-level highlight reel, have a personal story to tell, or aiming to diversify and grow your business, VSR Media specializes in short and long-form video storytelling, social media management, and website design. VSR Media also captures professional headshots, senior and sports photos. Contact them at VSRmediaCompany.com. Mention Iris Sports Daily to receive 20% off your first project. Visit them online or give them a call at 574-800-9106. What do you think of that, Jamie?
Huh? That was pretty darn good. I loved it.
All right. On to the next question, CHSFB75. With all the slot wide receivers on the team, should Notre Dame run condensed formations and use double slots? When does Notre Dame change to a 3-3-5 defense? Who starts at safety when if Hurd goes to nickel? Double slots is basically 10 personnel. So I think that's what he means.
I think so, but I mean, if you're asking if they use, like, they do a lot of condensed stuff. I mean,
if you're talking about bunch,
maybe he means
the slots are basically your
like outside the narrow receivers. Slots or whatever. Yeah. Like, yeah. The outside receivers. Oh, I mean, I don't see that happening.
But just because when you're in bunch, you're a kind of what would be in the slot. You know what I'm saying? Like from a bunch formation, you're not outside the numbers basically, or at the numbers. You're basically almost inside the hashes. So. Yeah. That's what he means by that.
I will say, if you go back and watch a lot of 2015, they did do quite a bit about condensed formation. Obviously, that's not something that they did a lot at LSU, mm-hmm. but that's, you know, something to think about with the tight ends and what Notre Dame will do with some of their stuff in terms of like Thomas and how he's like, you know, essentially a hybrid H-back type, right? I don't see Andy ever change it to a 3-3-5 defense as their base. I've kind of maintained, and this is something that I wrote and talked about last year too, is that like, I think they would love to have that. They would love to have the personnel to say like, okay, here's our answer to this is we can go 3-3-5. And obviously they play their dime package, which, you know, whatever they call, you know, spear, is a 3-3-5. So in that sense, they've changed. That's their third down package.
Right. Like they have, but they usually have four down, but the fourth down is a linebacker.
Is a linebacker. Yeah.
So it's, yeah. So like their personnel wise, they kind of have already done that.
Yes. I don't see, I think if the question is like Notre Dame going to run what Marcus Freeman ran at Cincinnati, like that dollar thing, I don't think they're ever going to run that.
Yeah.
I just don't. I don't think. I think, you know, that's something that maybe they can like pull out from time to time or something like that. If they got the personnel, obviously they tried to kind of run it a little bit in that 2021 season, and like they didn't have the personnel to run it. And it was very unsuccessful when they did. So it was like, you know, it worked so well at Cincinnati because they had the right people to do it. And they might have the right people to do it at Notre Dame, but also they've recruited all these defensive linemen that are like, a lot of them are going to be really good. So you're taking one of those guys off the field to get another guys. And right now they only have 8 scholarship linebackers in the fall. That doesn't scream 3-3-5, you know, and it would, you could say if like, oh, they had all these, they don't have that many numbers at safety either. So it's not like they have all these guys. I don't think that's going to happen. So.
Yeah. It's not something I think about or something that I think is going to happen, but like you said, personnel wise, they already kind of have that group on the field. So everyone can kind of both be right on that. Who starts at safety when Hurd goes to the nickel? It kind of depends who they think is the best third safety at that point, whether it's Luke Tolich or whether it's Adon Shuler or whether it's Ben Minnick or whether it's somebody else, right? Like maybe they would put Clarence Lewis back there, right? Like Clarence Lewis kind of sits on top of all this stuff, right? Because they can put him in a lot of places. So maybe he's that third guy, right? Maybe he's the third guy that they like back there. Obviously has experience, right? And so a lot of playing time. If they feel like one of the younger guys isn't ready, just go with him back there.
I mean, I've maintained that Clarence Lewis should have moved to safety like 2 years ago. So I just really think that he should have. I don't even know for sure that it would be his best spot. I just think that it's clear that he was never going to be his best spot was never going to be corner. Like, he's never going to be a guy who could play in the league I don't even know he could play in the league, period. But I'm just saying, like, he had a chance to make, I think, a bigger impact as a safety. So I think that would have been good for him. But, I mean, in terms of, like, I don't think Hurd is ever going to nickel. I'm just saying that. He's never – like, he will always be a safety, in my opinion. Because – and I don't even think if, like, you know, we kind of talked about it a little bit with Mike Goolsbee on Tuesday too, that, you know, even if Jordan Clark isn't the nickel, I don't think Hurd will be the nickel. And then the other thing is, when they go to third down, it's not like they're not going to take the nickel off the field and then put Hurd as the nickel. It's either he's going to be the nickel all the time and they're going to have another safety starting or whatever. And that's the thing. And he just, I'm just telling you, he played in like a completely different scheme where he's not, he didn't have to play like man coverage. And I don't think he's a man coverage, you know, nickel. So I don't think he's a fit there. And I think he is a very good tackler. And also a guy who, if you watch their bowl game against Utah, he's really good coming downhill as a run defender. So I think he's going to be the other safety with Watts as a starter. And then when they bring in a third guy, I would say, I mean, Shuler's got to be the heavy favorite to be that guy right now. Just based on kind of where they're at. But I'm like genuinely intrigued to see, like, I mean, obviously Shuler's got a lot to prove still. And, you know, if you say, like, who are the best guys? Like, if you just said, like, well, it's so obvious that, like, Jaden Mickey is, like, a better player than Shuler. And I'm not saying that definitively. I'm just saying, like, if that becomes the case, if there's like the third corner or like the third or fourth corner is so much better than the third safety, it's like maybe that guy is the, you know, the Aztec, right? Or that's what you do there. So but I think that's all the stuff that you got to kind of figure out, because I always kind of thought that DJ Brown, although he was obviously, you know, a smart player, he was never that guy that I was always like, when they were mentioned they were going to play him there, I was like, I don't think that's the best role for him, or he's going to like thrive there. And he really didn't really. He wasn't like he was this chess piece who didn't, but man, that would have looked really cool if Kyle Hamilton played there or something, you know, like if another guy like that played there.
It would be cool if Kyle Hamilton played any position on the football field, because he is awesome. Terry Tyler says, we need to get Everett G on the phone on the show. Let me tell you, I would kill to have Everett Golson on this show. He's not like online, right? Like, so he's not.
He is, yeah.
I don't want to say like off the grid, because I mean, like, just because he doesn't have social media accounts, that doesn't mean he's.
Oh yeah, he could, he's maybe not, he stays in touch with a bunch of people. Who knows?
Yeah, like if he's not on social media, he's not on social media. If anyone has a contact with Everett Golson, tell him to contact me. I'd love to talk to him. Seriously, he's one of my favorite. So. I like him a lot. All right. Next question. Funk Beavis asks, if you could go back in time to 1920 to coach the worst team in the Western Conference, but you could bring one current NFL player with you, who would you bring? And do you think you could coach the team to a national title with the one guy added? My pick would be Aaron Donald. Okay. So these questions are hard, because if I go back to 1920, like, what rules are we playing by? Like, do I get to run the spread? Like, I can't run RPO because the rules are such that you can't go down the line. How do the rules work? Do the 1920 players know the rules? Like how does it all happen?
How prevalent was the forward pass? Yeah. You know, also, like, I mean, not to whatever, I don't want to get too deep into this, but like, I don't think they broke the color barrier at that point in time. I think, like, you showed up with Aaron Donald on your team, they might be like, what? Like, you know, like, it's, I don't know. I would say Funk Beavis. First of all, I just love the creativity of this question.
Yes.
Congrats to Funk Beavis for this. But let's pick a little bit different era. Let's go a little bit more modern than 1920. Maybe 1960s, like, you know, era Parsegian, that kind of era or something like that. Because 1920s, it's just like you can pick anybody in the NFL. You can pick the guy who's on the practice squad, and that guy could come in and be like, Jesus, who is this guy?
Well, like, okay,
60
okay,
pounds, runs like this. Like,
let's go Paul Hornung era. Let's do that, right?
Okay.
Could, like, I feel like you could take Aaron Donald. You could. Or, like, any sort of, like, D lineman, right? But, like, man, it'd be hard to not take, like, Josh Allen, you know? Or someone like that, yeah, where it's like, Because you play them both ways too, right? So they're in that kind of that era where that's going on.
Yeah. So like Paul Hornung era is also Jim Brown era, right? Of of college football too. So man,
what's like you're bringing an NFL player to play college football too? That's another one.
Yeah.
I would say Lamar Jackson. That's like
Lamar Jackson is just because Lamar is a cheat code, right? Like, it's just one of those kind of things where, probably Lamar. I think he would be the number one pick.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even want to know. Like, I think of, like, that Lamar Florida State game where they put 60 on him, where it was just like, is a video game, and of just him running through guys,
that was insane.
Yeah. That was insane.
That was wild. Isaac K. Greg wants Hamilton. I'll win a national title with Kyle Hamilton. Give me Kyle Hamilton. He throw to himself. First one ever. Totally just revolutionized.
Well, Mr. Perfect.
That's right.
I remember the one classic of him throwing deep to himself.
That's right. Yeah. All right. Vamos Irish. You're allowed to grant the following elite level modifiers to five members of the team. Who gets what? Okay, so powers are strength. So, okay, we're going to give strength to one elite level modifier to one member of the team. Who gets the power of strength for you, Jamie?
This is a really tough one because you would have to think you'd go a lineman.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Gerby Lambert.
Oh, okay.
Because he's already coming in and he's like, you know, this guy is, he needs other pieces too, right? Obviously, but like if you come in and this guy all of a sudden has super strength to go with it, it's like, yeah, I mean, get ready. He's 3-0. He's going to be a 3-year starter and whatever. Like, so yeah, Gerby Lambert would be my strength.
I'll give it to Emil Wagner. Yeah, I want him to have
other guy that I was thinking of too.
Yeah, I want him to have just that ability because then be however big you want. I don't care. Be whatever you want to be, 280, 290. Fine. You have the power of strength. We're set. We're all good there. The power of speed, Jamie, I'm going to, you know who I'm giving the power of speed? I'm going to give the power of speed to Jayden Greathouse. I want to see my guy.
That's a good one.
I want to see my guy just flying all over the place. He's got that route running. He's got the ability to go up and catch the ball. He's got the ball skills. Give him the power of speed. He's going to be legit.
I mean, I'm going to give it to Clarence Lewis because I think Clarence Lewis, that's the big thing that guy's missing. If he had the long speed, he could be a different player. Like he just, that's what he's missing. So like, Greathouse would have been my pick on offense, but yeah, Clarence was my pick on defense.
All right, what do you got for agility?
agility is a tough one because it's like you can't really pick like Jordan Faison. The guy's already got like just crazy agility. I mean, obviously you could give him the other stuff and it would be nuts, but I would say, oh man, that is a really tough one. I'm going to say Eli Raerden.
Oh,
because he's already such a beast of a man and he's big. And I mean, he can run for sure, but he's like a big kind of like lanky matchup problem. You know what? Actually changing it right now to Rajon. It's like Riley Mills. Cause to me, like, that's the one thing. If like he had just that little bit of extra of lateral agility, that kind of like reactive athleticism, he could finish. Like he would be like, yeah, forget. I mean, obviously we're talking superpower. So yeah, he would be just a TFL machine.
Tosh Baker. I'm giving Tosh Baker the agility and he's going to straight to the NFL. You give him the agility with the size. You talk about his size. This is going to be an NFL tackle. Give him that agility, the agility skills to move at 6'8", 330 or whatever he is, straight to the NFL. Number one pick. Now my two tackles are unbelievable, right? I've got strong guy and Emil Wagner, Tosh Baker agility. It's going to be awesome. Cunning is basically like devious, sneakiness. What player do I want to have this? Who do I want to have this? Give it to, do I want the quarterback to have this?
I was going quarterback. I'm going.
Yeah, I'll say Riley Mill or Riley Leonard. Give it to Riley Leonard. I want him to be sneaky. I want him to be able to trick the defense with what he's doing. All the RPOs, Jamie. All the ball fakes. All that stuff. The play actions. Give him the ability to just be a sneak, just an absolute sneaker.
I was gonna say Kenny Minchie because I just really think is like he's already got like these really like traits that were. With some of the stuff where you've seen kind of him like change arm angles with certain things. And I'm like, man, I just think he would just be like a fun guy to watch with like that extra bit of cunning out there. Yeah.
All right. Perseverance. I think that's what he means. He says perseverance
perseverance.
Yeah, right. Perseverance. Who do you got for this?
You know what? Kevin Bauman. Kevin Bauman. Guys had just the worst luck, injury luck out of anyone since Sean Crawford and Drew Tranquil. Really since Sean Crawford. So, I'm giving it to him. I'm giving it to him because it's like, get through this and like, wouldn't it be a great story? I don't want to see him be a 9-year eligible guy like the one guy he's playing for Miami. But I want to see him like, get through this, end up playing ball and be like, look back and be like, he doesn't have to say, oh, what if this doesn't happen? Like he's able to go through and have like a nice little career for Notre Dame.
I'm going with Jalen Snead. Stick with it, man. Yeah.
That's a good one too.
With it. Just stay the course, stick with it. You'll get it. You're going to be great. Just have that ability, man. That's where I'm going with. With Estime gone, who will be the next to step up to the mic and during Irish karaoke? I don't know, man. This is tough because he's such a legend in that regard. I don't know who's got the pipes on that end. You know what? I'm gonna say one of the island guys, like one of the Polynesians, like. Kanukia or Junior Tulialamaka. Like Polynesians they're good singers.
They're good singers. Yeah.
It's just that in Long Beach City at my JC, like we had a lot of Polynesians on the team and all those guys, they could just blow.
Every Polynesian guy I played with could like sing, was like incredibly like talented at, like, you know, like really could do it, and like creative and stuff too. Great, great guys. Yeah. But yeah, I'd probably go with yeah, one of those guys.
Will Mission Barbecue renew their NIL deal with the O-line, or will another restaurant step up to the plate?
I mean, I don't even know. Like, I mean, someone should step up to the plate. I feel like it's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer. But, like, I don't know if, like, that really – it probably got some good pub for Mission Barbecue. I mean, yeah. I heard Mission Barbecue wasn't that, isn't that great. But
well, it's a chain, Jamie.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, you know, hey, there's some good chains out there. I just heard it wasn't one of the good ones. So just, let's just, whatever. So get a, if you make good food, sponsor the O-line and the D-line too, while you're at it.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't heard the Mission Barbecue thing. I feel like we've come a long way. We, the collective college football, since like the Mission Barbecue days. But look, good job by them for stepping up and at the outset of everything. Andy Rumpus, what would the ideal O-line lineup look like next year if everyone could play to their potential? That's tough. Like, I honestly, everyone's playing to their potential, right, Jamie? Everyone's their true selves, right? With their five strengths that we gave everybody, I would say true potential. I would say you would have Tosh Baker, left tackle. I would say Charles Jagusaw, left guard. Ashton Craig, center. Billy Shrouth, right guard. And Emil Wagner, right tackle. That would be my five. If we knew everyone was their best selves.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's I'd probably go with the same. Like, but I mean, I don't think that'll be the lineup, but I mean, that would be ideal if all those guys could kind of click with that. I mean, I have serious questions on whether or not like Tosh Baker can get to that point, but we'll see.
Okay. I also have
doubts
as well, but that wasn't the premise. All right. D Fennel, what are your thoughts on who's backing up Cross and Mills? And is there a realistic possibility that Rubio returns? Do you think if he returns, he's ready for a breakout season? Also, will Goolsby be a regular guest? You guys work well together. I know he is a regular on the other side. We kind of addressed it earlier. I don't know if he'll be a regular, but definitely have him on again. So you're going to want to be on the lookout for that. Thoughts on who's backing up Cross and Mills?
I mean, right now, Anya and Heinisch will be the guys. Donovan Heinisch will be the guys who start. I'm with the twos, I imagine. But I think it's kind of wide open. I think it's wide open, and it's wide open in terms of like, is Gabriel Rubio going to be back? And I think that's one of those things where you just don't know. And I think if there was like an answer for it, but we would, you know, we'd tell you if we kind of knew either way. But I think it's, there have been plenty of guys who have been gone for, you know, a amount of time and then made their way back. I think Gary Gray was one of them, right? Gary Gray was one of them. Darren Walls, Julius Jones, Kavari Russell, obviously. There's just been guys that for various different reasons were Everett Golson, right? Like there's just, you just don't know if those guys are going to make their way back. I mean, even Nolan Ziegler obviously he's transferred now, but like, I mean, I don't think anyone when it was the time, it was like, it was very uncertain whether he was going to be back. And the fact that he was even like practicing with the team at some point in the season was like kind of a shock to a lot of people that came back. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with Rubio. I mean, Rubio was good last year when he played. He just didn't play all that much because he kept getting hurt, and he missed a good chunk of the first part of the season too. But he was solid. Like, and I definitely think that if like, you know, Mills or Cross didn't come back, like Rubio could be starter level, the starting level player, and maybe take a jump. But obviously that's just like, it's totally uncertain. And then, like, what is Devin Houston going to be? What is Arnell Mookum going to be? What is Brandon Vernon going to be? Sean Seviano, I'm not expecting too much of him as a freshman, right? So we'll just kind of see. We'll see where it goes there. But I really think it's kind of interesting because I think that both Onye and Hynes showed enough to be like, you deserve that chance to be like, okay, you're going to come up with the twos, but also didn't show enough that it's like, you can't get jumped in the line for, to be in the rotation there. So, yeah, I'm really excited to kind of see those young guys and see where they're at.
Yeah. It's hard to say, like all the guys you mentioned, they all came back, right? They were all regular players though. You know, like,
yeah,
like Julius Jones is one, another one where
Julius
like,
Jones,
he was obviously very good. Darren Walls was a starter. Russell was a starter. Golson was a starter. Like these were all guys who were starter level players who then had to leave and then came back. Like, I don't know that there's a great example of a player who was a reserve, had to leave the program even for a little bit of time. Those players also had to miss full seasons. Whereas like,
yeah,
Rubio does not, right? So that's kind of
another, or maybe he does, or I mean,
who or knows? Maybe he does, but or like in this scenario, don't. Like if he was to come back, like so, I guess
I wouldn't count on him coming back for the fall. It's just my opinion. It's not anything I know. It's just my opinion.
So, and if that's the case, like it's hard for me to even see him come back to Notre Dame in that case, then, right? But yeah. I don't really know the nature of what's going on either. So it's just like just. On the face of it, it's hard for me to see someone, even if it assuming it was just the spring, came back in the summer, it would be hard for me to be like, yeah, he's going to have a big jump. He hasn't, I don't know what he's been doing, right? There are other guys who are now progressing forward. So that's kind of how I see that. And then I would agree with your other analysis on the D-line. Andy Matt 01. Mike's question on the board today got me thinking about how well our coaches develop talent at their positions. How well do you feel Al Washington does at teaching one-on-one pass rush? I feel like our line lacks secondary moves or really any other plan of attack once that player's preferred rush is taken away. Notre Dame really does not win much one-on-one. It's either blitz or games up front that scheme it open. Is it just a talent issue, or is there something else that he could do to create more one-on-one success? He does a great job in other areas. That's why I'm curious about why we don't see much improvement there. It's a really good question.
Okay, for Jamie. This is a great question, and I'm unfortunately, if you know, I'm going to go pretty long on this because this is something that I think that a lot of people, you know. They, no, Travis Denny, that is not the case with Rubio. So please don't start that rumor. So sorry, I just saw that. that's got nothing. I mean, maybe he was disappointed he came back, but that's not, it's got nothing to do with him being away from the team. He would have transferred if that was the case. Yeah. So I want everyone to think about Mike Elston was the, you know, defensive line coach at Notre Dame for a good chunk of the dozen years that he was there, right?
Yeah.
Name a Notre Dame defensive lineman during that time you're like, man, this guy was great at counters.
Mm-hmm.
Can you name one? I can't name one. And I'm a defensive line guy who watches a ton of defensive line, concentrates on it. And I'm not saying guys didn't ever win with counters, but it's not something that you know, that happened a lot or happens a lot, period.
Yeah.
Right. I want everyone to think about the top defensive linemen in the NFL draft, or even the top guys in the NFL. They're in the number of people that you think are like, man, this is great, like counters. There's like TJ Watt, Von Miller, the Bosa brothers, and not a lot of many other guys. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not a long list. Chris Jones, it's a short list of guys that are really, that have this like advanced understanding of counters and like can win with it. Because the thing with counters is it's a lot like route running as a receiver, where you can say, man, this guy is good at this. This guy's like, you know, man, this guy's a really great route runner. Well, how does a guy become a great route runner? I mean, some of it is coaching. Like, yeah, for sure. Like a coach teaches you certain things, how to become it. But the guys who become the really great ones are the guys that it goes beyond coaching. And it goes beyond what you learn, or even repping in practice. It's like the stuff you do after practice, the stuff you do watching film and learning about, like, well, then when this guy opens up here, I can do this. And it's the same with pass rush. And it's the same with defensive line. And in terms of, like, there are so many guys that want to – first of all, most guys go into it and they tell you, like, any defensive line coach will tell you, have a plan. Have a plan of, like, this is what the move you're going to work is, right? Well, depending on what you get on from an offensive lineman, like, okay, he's going to short set you here, or he's going to do this. Your plan could get thrown out the window right away. Right. And so even if you have a counter to that, not only do you have to know what counter you could do for this specific thing, but then you have to be able to win with that right away and do it in a way too, where you're fitting within the structure of the defense. Because if you're calling a pressure, you can't just go and take an inside route. If someone's blitzing a B gap and you're an end and you're rushing C gap, no one can. If you go inside there, the quarterback could just get out. Like, that's, you lose contain. You're the one who blew that. So even though you might be able to win with a counter inside, the defense can lose because of it.
Yeah.
And how, if you look at the quarterbacks that Notre Dame played this year, and how many of them were, how many times this year that they had to be like, they have to have a plan, like a specific rush plan to keep this guy in the pocket or to do this or do that, because they're worried about them as a runner. So you don't really have the freedom to do all of these counters and to take an inside move. So it's like, it's easy to say, well, this guy got out so quick with his kick step that I'm like going to take an inside move. And it's like, well, if you take that inside move, you're going to lose contain. So you better get there. And if you don't get there, it's on you. And that might mean that guy gets out of the pocket. All of a sudden the coverage breaks down because, you know, everybody's on the move, and that could end up first down, touchdown, whatever. And guess whose fault that is? That's the fault of the defensive end or the defense tackle, whoever, right? Like, so I don't think people have an understanding of that part of it in terms of, like, why aren't guys winning with counters more? It's like, well, you can't just come up there and say, like, it's not the same as when I'm doing one-on-one pass rush in practice. Because there, yeah, I can do any choice. I'm not having to fit within the scheme. I can just do whatever and work on this stuff. And it's not to say that sometimes you don't have the freedom, because sometimes you do, especially the guys who are really, really good. Sometimes they do, but a lot of times they don't, or they're not good enough to do it. Like, some guys aren't good enough to win with an initial move. So, because you have to have the traits to do that. So, like, I saw it, and sorry, this is a great question, Andy, Matt. So I just want to thank you for doing this. I know you mentioned this in there too, but I think people have, because people said the exact same thing about Mike Elston. And yet this year too, there are people saying that Mike Elston, they had Michigan might've had the best defensive line in the country this year. It's like, well, you know, they have good players and Mike Elston can coach. But it's not because that he's like this pass rushing savant. And it's not that there's some guys that can't teach or better at teaching certain things in terms of pass rush or whatever. That's true. But it's not as simple as, like, I want to see, like, why didn't Isaiah Foskey, develop more counters. It's like, honestly, it might, he just might not have the feel for it. And it might just be as simple as that. Cause he's got that long arm move that we talked about, that he'll just long arm a guy and he can win and get to the quarterback and close the pocket there. But you didn't see him win too many other ways, because it's not like he didn't work on it. Cause he tried to, he actually at the beginning of the 2022 season, he tried to do more of that stuff, but he wasn't winning. And then when he came back to like, I'm just going to come home and just work on my get off and just get a long arm, all of a sudden he starts getting sacks again. Right. Like it's way more complicated than that. Also, like in terms of like part of the stuff when they're running stunts upside, that is coached. Like that is very much coached, where you have to do your certain role, but you also have to win on that role too, because someone's picking you up. And there's not a ton of time. There's some scheme stuff that gets guys free, but like Howard Cross and Riley Mills, they won quite a bit inside doing it. And it's because those are the best pass rushers on the team. And JJB won quite a bit too. And he was a good pass rusher. But then you say, well, Botello, who was playing on like one arm and one leg or whatever, well, he wasn't winning. Well, he won more when he's like that. And some of these other guys, it's like Josh Burnham. It's like, I do think he could be a better pass rusher than he is, but he's not like the twitchiest guy and not the longest guy. So he needs to develop over time. And that just doesn't happen in a year for a guy who just, you know, is pretty new to the position. Right. So, and where we talked about how like Boubacar Traore, he's got a feel for it plus the traits, which is why he can really jump off. And I know, sorry, this is like a really long answer to it, but I think when people are judging this kind of stuff, or when they're judging receivers and saying like, man, this guy's like really bad at teaching people how to like run routes, it's like, it's not always that simple, because one, different guys have different skills and what they can do with it. And also some guys can think on the fly and see a guy open up and turn his hips and say, I got him now. And I got this or whatever. And other guys, they don't process it that fast. Mm-hmm. So it's reading stuff on defense too. And just like seeing certain things where some guys can play super fast and then other guys aren't, you know, they run fast, but they can't play fast.
Yeah.
Right. And it's all these kind of things. And some of it is coaching, because some of it is, you know, learned or whatever, but some of it is just some guys have it and some guys don't. And that's just like, wouldn't put it on coaching, because I think like most of the defensive linemen and the best defensive line, the best pass rushers in college football, those are the guys with just God-given traits. And the defensive line coaches help, you know, develop them into get better at their craft and all that. But it's why you just don't see guys just come out of nowhere. If you're going to get a guy who's like totally raw, he better have these just ridiculous traits that becomes with it, because you're not just going to get a guy. You're like, well, he's just big, or he just has this. It's like, you can't just take a ball of clay. He's got to be more than that.
Yeah, that's good stuff. That's great stuff from Jamie Uyama on the nuances of this conversation, because like there is nuance to this stuff. And like, I think no one blames Dylan McCullough for the fact that like, you know, Jabron Payne isn't great in space, right? Or he doesn't have like wiggle in space, or someone else doesn't have wiggle. Like, and Kyron Williams does, right? Like there is an art to this stuff, and some guys have that ability and some guys don't, especially when it comes to counters. Like it's one thing to teach them, especially in like a one-on-one thing where it's like, you're doing one-on-ones. It's like, yeah, you know, you're working on counters, right? Like, you know, you're working on these things. So it's top of mind. But when you're in a game and you have to do it on the fly and the thing you do doesn't work and you're like, I'm not getting to the quarterback, and you kind of freeze up, or you don't hit the counter the way you want. It's just like some guys, like you say, Jamie, like some guys just have a feel and some guys don't. Jacob Paulus brought it up too in the comments. So, you know, that it's one thing to teach it, but you also have to have a mix of traits, of God-given ability, and things of that nature. So really good job by you, Jamie, on that answer for a really good question. This is our last one of the day. Eskimo ND says, Jamie, in your pinned post, breaking down the defensive options, you identify a recent player, an example of someone who fit each position well. Could you name, do the same for the wide receiver positions, i.e. field, boundary, and slot?
I mean, I would say Michael Floyd, boundary, Will Fuller, field, and slot. I mean, Avery Davis comes top of mind to me, but I don't know if it is.
I was thinking TJ Jones for this.
Oh, TJ Jones. There you go. Yeah. There you go.
I would say him. You know who had been like a really great slot, like fit the because he's a good wide receiver overall. It's DeVaris Daniels. He is like a legit man. 2015 or 2014 could have been awesome with him on the boundary and Fuller to the field. Like that could have been really something. I mean, that is like a kind of a forgotten. Golden Tate too, right? He's pretty good. could have used a Biletnikoff winner for that. But DeVaris Daniels in 14, just he could, because he was part of that Frozen Five group and he never made it back in 2015, which is a bummer. Because
having a great CFL career.
He's really good, really, really good player. He's got a lot going for him on that front. So that's going to do it, Jamie. That's all the questions. We got through all of them. We said it was going to be short, and it wasn't.
And I'm sorry. I went like 20 minutes on that one question.
We were going long anyway, so that's all good. Doesn't matter. We do it for the people. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to this channel. Please like this show. Please hit the notification bell so you know whatever it is. We are going live. We'll be back next Tuesday with more great Notre Dame football talk and content. Check out Irish Sports Daily's irishsportsdaily.com. There's going to be a commitment announcement from Owen Strebick. Hopefully it goes well for Notre Dame. And check the YouTube channel. We're going to be releasing a video with Marina Mabry on Friday or Saturday. So until then, thank you, everyone. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the Super Bowl. Keep hitting and hustling.